Thanks for listening and welcome to the program for Thursday, September 13th, 2012 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Industry chatter today, as we do every week in the 3 o'clock hour on Thursdays. And my guest today is Mark Testoni. He's president of NS2, National Security Solutions, SAP. Thank you very much for being here today, Mark. It's great to see you.
Francis, thanks for having me and NS2 on your program this afternoon.
Let's start by telling me what your company does for clients in the federal space, please.
Well, Francis, SAP is a big provider of enterprise information management and business transformation solutions to Fortune 1000, really customers across the world. We also have a fairly sizable government business, but because of the ownership being foreign, we have a separate subsidiary that handles more of the sensitive and secure business that we do. So I happen to have the honor to run that business for SAP. So in that line, we do full enterprise information management software. We implement software solutions, both from a data management perspective to the pure SAP history of business process transformation, financial logistics, and all that. And then we support those products as well.
As you look at the landscape where the government is going now, the conversations that you have with your clients, what are they revolving around right now? I'm going to guess it's budgets and money, but tell me if I'm wrong or what else you're hearing.
No, I mean, obviously, I would drape it all under a kind of an umbrella of uncertainty. And because when we look back kind of the last few years, we really haven't had a budget process that's resulted in the typical federal budget in a few years. We've had a lot of continuing resolutions and omnibus acts and things of the nature. And now with the issues that are on the table right now, which really about a year ago came to a head with the debt ceiling crisis, and then the last year has played out as kind of the polarization around where we are headed directionally between elements of Congress and the administration, it's driven a lot of uncertainty. You know, you hear the threat of sequestration, all those things. So uncertainty means people are probably more reluctant to take on and do new things because they're not exactly sure what's coming.
That word I hear probably more than I hear budget stuff. And it's interesting because I'm hearing now two schools of thought about this six-month continuing resolution. One school of thought is that it's worse than the way things have been done before because it's prolonging this CR situation. The other school of thought is that it's really good because at least for 6 months we know exactly what to expect, where the last couple of years it's been, well, this CR will last for 2 weeks and this one will last for 2 days and then we'll have another one for 3 weeks and on and on and on. Any thoughts about that?
It's a dual-edged sword. Yeah. I mean, what it's going to do from a strategic perspective is likely extend the period of uncertainty. And that uncertainty is probably, it's worse than it was a year ago. So there's more hesitation. When you have a continuing resolution, and as I'm sure you're aware of, new initiatives kind of get tabled. Although I believe the current CR that the House is putting up for vote in the next day or so has a slight, very slight increase in the overall spend. It's, the baselines have been cut in the last couple of years. So we're really just extending that period of uncertainty. So tactically, some things will get done, but new initiatives. There's also, when we look at investment type spend, that has a tendency to be more curtailed. It's mostly in the operations and maintenance side that gets funded, on a consistent basis, and the other is scrutinized more. So overall uncertainty will continue, I think.
The other part of this that I think I'm hearing kind of two different lines of thought is, one, it's promising that they were able to come to a six-month CR, and maybe that bodes well for trying to figure out sequestration during a lame duck session and so on. And the other line of thinking is totally cynical, which is they just did it because of the election, and after the election it's going to be right back to the way things are. And I know that's just a predictive thing, and it's not no way to tell for
one
sure.
One can – and it's a very good point because the CR does not – at least in my understanding, address the sequestration issue,
right,
which conveniently was set for the end of the calendar year, not the fiscal year already. So there was, in essence, a political consideration when that was put in place.
Yeah.
But the good news is that the speaker and and Mr. Reed got together to create this environment, and I think there's at least some positive out of that. And I think there's a political reality. But when you look at the end of the year, there's so much going on with sequestration beyond the 55 to 60 billion it would immediately take out of the defense accounts, and I guess it's 100 billion across the feds in the discretionary spend. You have things like the what they're often called the Bush tax cuts that expire, and the implications for the economy. So there are many things on the table that have to be addressed in that quote lame duck session, or the can kicked, which could likely be, well, let's extend everything. But I think there are some members, at least ones that I've, there are some members that are very concerned about kicking the can.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be a lot of, that'll be a very interesting time for us.
Now, the uncertainty isn't just in the agencies, it's for companies like yours as you're trying to strategize how to navigate through all of this, I imagine.
Yes, sir. I mean, it's a challenge in the uncertainty in the customer base drives uncertainty for us. You know, we have a number of things that we're working on at any given time across the federal government, and there's timing for those things, and they're going to be in question. If, for example, the good news, and not good news, but the reality is there's going to be cuts. Now, if it's done on a non-sequestration basis, it's done more elegantly, and the planning can be done. And I think we'll get back. If a sequestration happens, at least for a period of time, that could be fairly draconian in some areas. And also, the problem with a six-month extension is that specter of that is going to continue to hang out there.
And I guess that brings us back around to your point about uncertainty, is there are so many moving parts here that I don't think – a lot of folks have ever seen anything like this before, where we just don't know what could happen.
Yeah, I think the last time when we had this kind of crisis inside government, and I don't know, most of your listeners probably remember this, maybe some of them don't, in the mid-90s when we, quote, shut down the government mm-hmm. for a short period of time. And, there was a lot of political fallout from that. But I don't think I've seen, personally, a more divisive time in our country. And I think people have very strong opinions. And one of the concerns I have is no matter what the results of November, I've forgotten the date of the election, but early November, we're still likely to have some form of government that is not going to be – so we're going to have to figure out how to all get along. And hopefully the leadership in Congress, and I'm confident they will – we'll come to the table and try to do something about this.
Are there outcomes, not political necessarily, but are there outcomes that you could see being beneficial to your company and the landscape for the federal contracting business in general? And are there outcomes that you could see being pretty dramatically bad for the landscape?
I think the reality is, I'll go back to my earlier comment, there's going to be less government spend. I believe, and forgive me if I'm wrong on these numbers, but we have about a $16 or $17 trillion GDP, it may be more, maybe less. And now we have budget numbers that are actually approaching that on a par level, or budget, debt that we've created. So I think that, it's time and that kind of communication, education to the American people and what that means for us. And so I think there will be an outcome that leads to less spend. For a company like ours, we use we work with partners and work with our customers to drive, and there are others to do this, to drive costs down in delivering federal services or government, other government services and commercial activities. So we think, there's a bigger role for us in this space, even if the spend is less. And the second thing I would say is, the way that the government acquires and the way that we respond, and we as an industry respond, will probably have to change because we've got to become more agile to deliver commercial solutions that can ultimately really make a difference in spend and the cost of delivery.
Two concepts there that I want to follow up on when we come back, the commercial applications. And one of the ways that I'm hearing agencies are asking companies like yours to help them save money, and we'll talk about those when we come back. This is Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Mark Testani of SAP NS2, and our conversation continues in just a moment.
Supporting our troops has never been more important, and the military's need for strategic procurement decisions has never been stronger. Smart sourcing begins with GSA's multiple award schedules. GSA makes it easier to get what you need, when you need it, on time and on budget. You'll save time and money by reducing costly delays in purchasing services and products with the flexibility and control you need to negotiate better pricing. GSA also provides best value through established contracts with pre-qualified vendors and streamlined access to a wide selection of contractors. You can also create blanket purchase agreements to meet your command's recurring requirements. To find out how GSA's multiple award schedules can help you support your mission, visit gsa.gov/ACQMPM. That's gsa.gov/ACQMPM.
By combining HP 3PAR utility storage with HP ProLiant Gen 8 servers powered by the latest Intel Xeon processors, you can lower your total cost of ownership and improve project ROI. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how HP can power your data center into the future. Call GovConnection's experienced federal team, where service and commitment to the customer are priority one. Call 800-800-0019 today.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
And now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
Federal employees with questions about their thrift savings plans will soon be able to turn to YouTube for answers. The Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board, which runs the 401k plan for feds, says it started developing multiple videos to post on the site. One describes how to make interfund transfers. Another lays out the details of the Roth TSP for members of the military. The TSP board hopes to roll out the videos this fall.
Will you be receiving a 25% life insurance premium refund check from your insurance company? Federal employees with WEPA Life Insurance will be receiving over $7 million in premium refunds this fall. Since 1996, WEPA has refunded over $65 million in premiums. In comparison, Fegley has never issued a premium refund. Isn't it time you considered WEPA for your family's life insurance needs? For better insurance, better prices, and better value, visit WAEPA.org. That's WAEPA.org.
A law that has made it easier for the feds to spy on terrorist suspects seems popular on Capitol Hill. But on Friday's Federal Drive, we'll talk with one senator who's saying not so fast. And we'll meet the Federal Employee of the Year, an NIH doctor who has helped stop the spread of HIV from mothers to children. I'm Emily Kopp. Join me at 6 here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Mark Testoni of SAP NS2, my guest on Industry Chatter today. And I mentioned, Mark, before the break that there were two concepts I wanted to take out of the first part of our conversation and expand on those. One of the things that you mentioned is your clients are coming to you, your customers in the federal space, and saying, we need cost reduction. We need to spend less to accomplish the same thing. One of the ways that they're asking you to do that is the concept of innovation. And I wonder what kind of what thoughts you have surrounding that concept of innovation. Are the agencies pointing you in a particular direction, or are they just saying, show us something cool? When they talk about innovation, are they asking, do you get a sense that they're asking you for different approaches to solutions, or are they asking for bright, shiny objects? Any of those thoughts that you might have around that concept of innovation?
You know, there's a technical innovation component, and then there's what I would call a business innovation component, okay? On the technical side, what I see going on, and it's even eking up to the highest levels, people pick up their, and I'm showing Francis my iPhone, which happens to be off, thank the Lord. They pick that up, and they're doing things at home, and they live their lives through devices. And then the young people, and many of the people now, even that are more closer to my age, are saying, why don't we have this inside of our agency, company, whatever? I mean, I've heard this even in companies because we've dealt with some of those. So they want the same, you know, they want the same kind of end result. And so one of the challenges is how can we do that? And we're starting to see some real interest in delivering solutions in ways that we can do that, either through a cloud against some legacy back end or whatever. So, and that's an area and a space that my company and many others are in. So that's one. On the business innovation side, and we're kind of hamstrung a little bit in a lot of ways, is government has been doing business the way government does for a long time. There are acquisition processes that exist, and they exist for good reason. What they aren't at times, and not always, but at times, is nimble enough to allow the companies to respond in such a way that they can get them rapid innovation. So we have to work industry and government together to come up with ways to make things happen faster. And often it's not the technical aspects. Those are challenging. But where are the low-hanging fruit? And then how can we create business arrangements between industry that are more agile and rapid to be able to do things quickly? Because these technologies are changing daily.
You know, when you talk about innovation in that context, it occurs to me that I hear a lot from your peers in industry that there are all kinds of innovative things that we could help the government do just in their acquisition process, the way you're talking about it. Things that wouldn't favor one vendor over another, but things that as a group of people, as an industry concerned about helping the government do the things they need to do better and faster. There are possibilities that exist, and it's just hard to, you know, turn the battleship, the old saying goes.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest challenge. It's, we've been acquiring things, and you know, one of the things when you look at commercial applications of and technologies versus specifically built ones for, and they're always adapted for the customer, whether it's a commercial customer or government. There's abilities to adapt them, but. We in the acquisition processes today still look at very detailed specifications to do things instead of what are the outcomes that we're looking for. And consequently, that makes it harder, I think, to be agile because it takes more time to define very detailed requirements. Now, when it comes to building the F-35 or the latest battleship, that's clearly an understandable position. But when it comes to cloud computing or delivering a technical, you know, delivering a service, an analytics service to some customer against a database, we ought to have a better way to get to outcomes versus speccing it. And I'm not saying that it always happens, but they're the same acquisition policies and procedures govern those. Now, there's been some, you know, you know, there are some agencies that do this well, better than others, but it's the reality.
And that was going to be my next question, is what trend do you see that going in, though? Because I am hearing that there's a little bit of progress, pockets of it, as you say, some agencies better than others, but at least there seems to be a little bit of movement.
No, there's agility there. I mean, I've seen some things at state, local over the years, and even in the federal space, where there's real efforts to do that. You know, when we went through some of the big budget challenges in the 90s and the 2000s on the federal agency side, you know, agencies had to start, you know, ones that became more cost reimbursable or like working cap, they had to become innovative. And so the procedures and processes are there. You know, as a group, you know, I would say that the defense side, it's more of a challenge. And that's partially because it's bigger dollars and bigger programs. But we look at the world very much on a programmatic level across government because the way we fund. And sometimes that doesn't align with the capability that we necessarily need. So I think, you know, some of the things have been done in the last 10 to 15 years around that create more IDIQ with broader scope. Those have been very helpful and allowed for some of this innovation. But it ultimately comes down to a customer and a contracting official to determine whether they can take that path or they need another one.
The other concept that you mentioned earlier that I wanted to follow up on, you talked about the you've made a number of references, actually, to commercial applications and the ability for government to be able to either adapt them or just buy them right off the shelf. Are you seeing agencies more comfortable with that approach rather than we have to create this totally from scratch and because nobody does it quite the way we do, that kind of thing?
Yes, actually, that's been a great. There's been a great change in that in the last 15 to 20 years, and it needs to continue. What it rubs up against at times the environment of the legacy environment and the legacy knowledge embodied by a customer, and that happens even in a commercial space at times, but. There is much more embracing of that, and there are examples of many examples of successful commercial applications applied into government, variety of vendors. It needs to become a little easier and more rapid to do. You know, I look back at when I first came into the industry from government in the late 90s. It was about doing ERP and doing data warehouses and things of that nature. It's no longer about those things. It's about, those were done over many years. Now it's how do I get a rapid capability into somebody's hands against maybe a mosaic that I have of different systems in the background. That's the key driver. That's what the companies like mine are trying to push. Yeah, we can help you that way. We got to find faster ways to do it.
Is that speed only driven by the budget situation, or is it driven also by just better technology, or is it some combination, or is it something else?
Well, industry, one of the beauties of the, we have the greatest economy in the world, and we have, the greatest application of free enterprise and democracy in the history of the world. And, the beauty of that is, it has its downsides and its plus sides, but companies, including my parent company, SAP, and helping many, many customers, but they're driving margin is like combat capability would be to the Department of Defense. The more dollars that I return, the more I can invest back into the next. And that's what – so that approach works in industry, and it's beginning to work some in government. Some of the motivations for that are less in government because often – if you do something, you'll have the money taken away from you rather than be able to apply it at something else. So I see you smiling on that one because that's a story.
Heard that many times, yeah.
And that's another challenge we have in government. So it is sometimes the motivations aren't quite the same.
Mark Testoni is my guest. He's the president of SAP NS2 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Our conversation continues in a moment. This is Industry Chatter. You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose.
To win and deliver government healthcare contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Moreover, with over 900 healthcare IT initiatives proposed in the 2013 federal budget, you need to begin building your healthcare IT teams now. Meet Tech Systems. Every year, Tech Systems deploys thousands of IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems Government Services offers a dedicated healthcare division to deliver practical healthcare IT solutions to the federal, state, and local government. No matter where you are on your meaningful use journey, Tech Systems can guide you through the transition. From providing managed services that tailor end-user training by role and workflow, to providing BI solutions that get you closer to your quality care goals, Tech Systems, our people make IT possible. Learn more at techsystems.com, TEKsystems.com.
The Cloud First Report, presented by the cloud computing experts at GTSI and HP.
The Army and the Defense Information Systems Agency have reached a major milestone in their transition to a cloud-based email system. The Army now has 500,000 users on the system. Thousands of other users from the military's Joint Staff and U.S. European Command have migrated into the DISA private cloud as well. Officials say the work they've done so far will set the stage for other enterprise services like SharePoint, centrally managed secure mobile devices, and records management capabilities. optimized?
Public, private, hybrid? The options for moving to the cloud are many, and mandated transition deadlines are right around the corner. Industry leaders GTSI and HP have established a cloud center of excellence in Herndon, Virginia, specifically focused on navigating the cloud options available to agencies and to help you decide on what approach is best for your requirements. Get your head in the cloud. Contact a GTSI HP cloud computing expert and reap the benefits of increased operational efficiency and decreased program costs. Email hpccoe@gtsi.com today.
I'm Linda Carr, President and CEO of Advanced Alliance Solutions Team, AAST, a joint venture of small businesses dedicated to providing the federal government with exceptional services under the GSA Alliance Small Business Contract. Our goal is to team with small, medium, and large IT companies to deliver needed services to the federal government.
Please contact them at advancedalliant.com for potential small business teaming opportunities. That's advancedalliant.com.
Pay attention and graduate college. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. It makes sense that being better able to pay attention and keep working on a problem will help someone graduate college. But a researcher says it starts young. At Oregon State University, Megan McClellan followed data on 430 people who were preschoolers at the start.
Children who had high levels of attention and persistence at age 4 had nearly 50% greater odds of completing college by the time they were 25.
McClellan says the benefit held up even after accounting for other factors such as reading and math scores. She says parents can help children practice stopping and thinking before acting, but shouldn't make the kids feel like it's work. The study in Early Childhood Research Quarterly was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Mark Testoni of SAP NS2, my guest on Industry Chatter today. And one of the challenges that agencies are dealing with and that companies like yours, I imagine, are dealing with are the whole cost containment thing. And we've talked about how that affects agencies. What are the implications from a business strategy perspective, Mark, when you're talking about cost cutting and you're expecting at least shifts in where your revenue is coming from in the foreseeable future?
Well, you know, the opportunity for us and for others is cutting, you know, the cost cutting offers both a challenge and an opportunity if the budgets are less. So this gets back to really two areas. There's the one being, can we create alternative business models to deliver capability at less cost to the government? I think the answer is yes. We and industry and government have to work together. But we then also have to, as the government cuts the cost out, the kinds of things that we do with information technology, whether it's improving business processes or administering information better, mobilizing it, whatever, generally the costs that tend to get cut in a commercial sector are revectored around people. Because if you look at, you know, many companies, people is usually one of the highest cost items in government, in the federal space, in the discretionary side, I would guess it's a fairly sizable thing. That's always a challenge in this environment because particularly in an unemployment situation, unemployment rates above 8%, very persistent. When we start looking at real efficiency and effectiveness, can we tolerate less heads? In business, typically what happens is those heads are revectored to, those people are revectored to more high value areas than doing, you know, back end to create more revenue or whatever. That's a little bit of a more of a challenge inside government. Can we actually, do we really want to cut that kind of cost out?
That's the focus. You and I talked about the remarks by some of your peers at some of the larger defense contractors submitted to Senator McCain earlier this week. And as I went through the letters that they sent to him, the idea of people, and we might have to cut people, or our partners, the subs that we deal with, might have to cut people. That's the theme in all of these. And I think that's the next, maybe the next layer below what Congress has looked at so far. Is that, yeah. Does that make
well,
sense?
Yeah. I mean, as it relates to, and I think those comments related to sequestration.
Yes,
and,
that's true.
And that would be a relatively, you know, that could potentially be very radical and harmful to the country, because the kind of people that I'm talking about are more in, and the things that companies would look at if we did it in a more predictive way would be over time we would look at, and in concert with our government partners, where is the value associated? All right, we need to take cost out. We can take them out of maybe a back-end administrative function versus something that's directly supporting the warfighter, for example. But, you know, those comments is, that we discussed around a very, you know, abrupt act like sequestration, you know, would cause significant, you know, consternation, I think, too.
And I don't think anybody debates that, yeah. But I wonder if the concept that you're talking about is wouldn't be the same result long term. It wouldn't be 3 months from now, but it may be 3 years from now, or it may be 10 years from now, we might see a reshaping in such a way that the landscape would look dramatically different than it does today.
It could be, and it could be that there's a similar number of people, but they're doing different things. You know, one of the shifts, I think, the folks that made those comments, you know, a lot of it, you know, over the last 5 to 10 years, we've seen a lot of dollars in the defense side shift from the acquisition of hardware to more the sustainment. So there are more people-intensive work that's being done by the big contractors than necessarily, you know, the building of the weapon system or whatever. Now it's more the sustainment and all that. And how do I improve that? Ultimately, if we're going to spend less money in government, at some point, it's going to have an implication for employment, or either being revectored into higher value activities or not as around doing the same things.
Mm-hmm. Where do you see that overall trend going in, say, the next 2 to 5 years? What kind of people? I'm certainly not asking you to predict specifically who you're going to hire and what for, but where do you see areas of potential growth in your workforce, and where do you see opportunities to expand?
Well, you know, as we look at what, you know, the demand, I think, will continue in the government as it is in the private sector for new ways of delivering rapid capability. So technical resources are going to be, you know, highly technical people who can develop these systems and deploy them are going to be, you know, at a very high premium. And, you know, that's a battle for us today. We're always looking for highly qualified technical people. And then on the marketing and sales side, you're looking for people who can help customers better understand whether it's in government or in the commercial sector. So, you know, one of the challenges we've had in this country is, and you hear this one thrown out often, is, you know, we bring people over from other countries, we educate them, and then we don't let them stay in the country. Now, that's probably an exaggeration, but we do have challenges in immigration for highly technical people, and it's something we have to look at. And I think both the administration and the Republican candidate, Mr. Romney, are very sensitive to this issue, because many of these skills are not, they're because we've built this huge global supply chain around technical or global available, not necessarily in this country.
Well, Mark Testoni is my guest. He is the president of SAPNS2 here on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And our conversation continues in just a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
When lives are at stake, you need technology you can count on. FLIR Systems' legacy of life-saving thermal imaging sensors continues through their offering of full-spectrum chemical, biological, radiation, and explosive threat detection systems and beyond-the-fence perimeter security solutions. Visit FLIR.com to learn more. FLIR Systems, because it's not just your job, it's your life.
Attention all federal and military agencies. In March, the Australian Defense Force saved more than $150 million by using Intelsat General to put critical communications into space as a hosted payload on one of our satellites, on time and on budget. Our next hosted payload satellite launches in 2013. So if your agency needs on-time, on-budget access to space, take an example from our allies down under and look no further than Intelsat General. Learn more at spacedelivered.com. Intelsat General Hosted Payload Program. That's spacedelivered.com.
$1.2 trillion in across-the-board spending cuts are set to hit federal agencies starting January 2nd. What programs will be affected, and how are agencies preparing? Will federal employees be furloughed? And how will contractors handle the funding reductions? The clock is ticking. Congress has 4 months to agree on alternative cuts before sequestration becomes a reality. Find the latest news at federalnewsradio.com/sequestration.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Kevin DeSouza is Associate Dean for Research at the College of Public Programs at Arizona State University. He has been studying the merits of Challenge.gov.
One of our recommendations of our report is as agencies think about running challenges, they need to have very clear evaluation guidelines up front and make sure that they know exactly how do they want to implement the output.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Belinfi. Overweight or obese children are at increased risk of type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular complications later in life. NIH's Dr. Christina Rother says parents should pay attention to their children's weight.
Many, many parents don't know whether their child is, in fact, overweight or obese. And the first step is often taken by the pediatrician, who at a well baby check or a well child visit points out that the child is too heavy. And then most parents ask, what can I do about it?
Dr. Rother recommends resources like the websites wecan.nhlbi.nih.gov or letsmove.gov. Health Matters is produced by the National Institutes of Health, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The president of SAP NS2, Mark Testoni, is my guest on Industry Chatter today. And at the risk of asking you to name the number, I'm just going to say that you have been in the federal marketplace working in public sector sales management for a long time. As you look back, and we've talked a little bit about some historic things, but I want to focus on that a little bit more in this part of the conversation, Mark. What do you see happening now that maybe you haven't seen before and might potentially be something good for, that bodes well for the future? We've talked about the conflict on the Hill, and that's historic and so on. But what do you see out there that you like compared to the way things have been done in the past?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, there is a more open mind. You look at some of the things in the last 4 or 5 years. I mean, both the Congress and the administration have put a very big focus on cybersecurity. And I think it's a great thing for the country. Not necessarily that the specific legislation comes out a specific way, but the idea that we've gotten it up there. There's been a tremendous amount of, you know, to try to embrace or look at things like cloud computing to drive innovation and cost reduction. So those kind of things. So there's some policy things both from the Hill and that have been good. I also think that, you know, as difficult as this polarization has been, that I have a lot of faith in the leadership in this country that you know, we are going to get down to brass tacks here soon. I think we have to become a little bit more open and explain to the American people the reality of where we are. And I think that the Congress and the administration will rise up and we as industry to help get us through this. So, you know, we were jokingly talking a little bit about 20 odd years ago when the last time sequestration was in vogue with Graham Rondon Hollings and you know, some of the same kinds of things I recall from way back because we were coming off a the big Reagan era buildup and defense, and that was under a lot of scrutiny. And it's interesting. I think at the end of the day, great Americans will do great things. We are still, and so I'm hopeful for that. With that, and then the empowerment down into the agencies to, okay, have some flexibility, but let's drive some cost out in an appropriate way, then the interest in these innovations in this cruelly incredible time that we live in are exciting to me. So, I mean, I'm very hopeful that despite where we are, that we are a country that will solve the problem.
The reason I ask that is because it is very easy, given where we are today, to get long in the tooth and just get really down about what is going on when, oh, the budget is so bad and things are so hard and can't find enough good people to do the things that we need, and on and on and on. It's real easy to get wrapped up in that.
It is, but you know what? At the end of the day, I go back to the first thing that you and I talked about a little while ago, which was uncertainty. Once we have a little less, there's always uncertainty. Right? There's no certain life. But once we have a little less uncertainty and there's some strategic direction that we're going to go, I mean, companies like mine, I mean, I've got 250 people that by and large want to compete every day and win, okay? And that's what keeps me going, and I'm sure keeps many people going, no matter, even though we may be a little long in the tooth, some of us now, keeps us young. So let's take off some of these distractions and get kind of our strategic direction in place. And I think, you know, my company and many others have many things to offer our partners, really, the government, to drive it. At meeting the challenge this nation will have over the next 20 years.
You make a good point. There is always uncertainty. And I guess if we try to think about it in a little bit of context, in the scope of the grand scheme of things, between now and January 2nd, that's not a long period of time.
No, it's not.
Now in December, the lame duck session, whatever they're able to figure out, that's not a long period of time. By February or March of next year, I imagine we'll have some kind of a sense. Obviously, we'll know what's happened with sequestration, and we'll be at the end of this continuing resolution. And so I guess we can cross fingers.
I think what really should hopefully will happen is that we'll come to an accommodation that doesn't allow a sequestration to happen, at least immediately, and gives the new Congress, because there's always a new Congress, and then whether it's the same administration or a new one, but in a new context, the ability to collaborate and work together to solve the problem. Let's make sure we have the right amount of time. But if you look at the 6 month CR and you kind of figure we would hope by next spring sometime, you know, things would be sorted out. And that doesn't mean the business of government can stop. And all of us recognize that. And we will, we go out every day prosecuting that. Uncertain as it is, there's still a lot of things getting done.
No, you're exactly right. The business of government rolls on, and I think we get bogged down in the what's happening today and what's happening 6 months from now to the expense of thinking kind of long term and thinking, you know, these things will go away or resolve themselves or someone will resolve them in a short period of time. And so the time that we have left, I'm going to take another break. The time that we have left, I'd like to think about I'd like to hear your thoughts about what that 2 to 5 year horizon looks like in this space based on your experience and what you're seeing happen today. Mark Testoni is my guest. He's the president of SAPNS2, and we'll wrap up our conversation on Industry Chatter in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The nation's largest intelligence event returns to Orlando, Florida, October 8th through 11th. USGIF's GEOINT 2012 Symposium features speakers from the defense, intelligence, and homeland security communities, as well as panel discussions and breakout tracks tackling the critical issues affecting our national security. Network with professionals and uncover new technologies from more than 250 organizations. Register and learn more at GEOINT2012.com. That's GEOINT2012.com.
Here in the metro area, you'll find interesting people, top-notch restaurants, great sports teams, and plenty of monuments and museums. And here is where you'll find your next career, as a civilian employee of the United States Coast Guard. A career in the U.S. Coast Guard offers you stability, excellent federal benefits, and a flexible work schedule. So if you're looking for that next opportunity, consider the U.S. Coast Guard, where your career is how you serve. To find out more, visit the United States Coast Guard website at coastguardcivilian.com/federal. The U.S. Coast Guard is an equal opportunity employer.
At Kaiser Permanente, we want you to live well, be well, and thrive. Now, there's an app for that. With the new Kaiser Permanente mobile app, designed specifically for the needs of our members, you can schedule a routine appointment with your doctor's office, refill a prescription, check on your test results, review your medical records, email your doctors, all from your smartphone, directly and securely. Now, in addition to apps that let you find a local yogurt shop or post pictures of your dog wearing a hat, there's an app that lets you do something even more remarkable. It helps you stay connected with everyone who's important to your health and your family's health. Get the Kaiser Permanente mobile app at the Android Market or the Apple App Store, or bookmark kp.org on your smartphone. It's as easy as using a giant slingshot to shoot birds at pigs, if you know what I mean. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852. Apple is a registered trademark of Apple Inc. Android is a trademark of Google Inc.
By combining HP 3PAR utility storage with HP ProLiant Gen 8 servers powered by the latest Intel Xeon processors, you can lower your total cost of ownership and improve project ROI. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how HP can power your data center into the future. Call GovConnection's experienced federal team, where service and commitment to the customer are priority one. Call 800-800-0019 today.
With federal CIO Stephen Van Roekel's Future First Plan aiming to embed best practices into the government, agencies will need to change everything from their development methodologies to the length of the acquisition cycles. Join AFSCEA Bethesda on September 26th at the Bethesda North Marriott to look at how agencies will take advantage of their new approaches to managing information technology and what impact it will have on the contractor community. Register today at AFSCEABethesda.org/SEPTBreakfast.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's industry chatter in the 3 o'clock hour every Thursday. My guest today is Mark Testoni. He's the president of SAP NS2. And we talked about the idea that folks are very focused on what is happening today and 6 months from now. And I hear this in industry and in the agencies, especially from technology people at the agencies. I got blinders on for whatever project or program or whatever I'm working on now, and I don't have a lot of opportunity to kind of think conceptually. You have to do that as the leader of a company. When you do that right now, based on what you see and what you've experienced in your career, where do you see the kind of the lay of the land a couple of years from now or half a decade from now?
You know, it's interesting that the beauty of government and around the defense space specifically is that we have a history of doing amazing things in this country. I mean, if we were to look back 15 years, we really didn't, and we look at the way we took on a conflict, say, in the mid to late 90s in Bosnia versus what we're doing today, it's totally different. So I would say that this view of the world and this internet world where the crisis is here, and believe me, it's a significant crisis and we all recognize it, it will pass. And, you know, we'll have, I think, but we're at a crossroads where we're going to set some new directions as far as how we do government and how we take care of those in the safety net. Though it probably won't be the same. It'll probably be different in both cases, but it'll be, at the end of the day, I'm confident it'll be effective. So as I look at it, I do believe that, overall dollars are going to go down. We're not going to be fighting conflicts to the extent that we are still or supporting them in multiple places in the world. There may be different conflicts. And so there'll be less money by and large. With that, there's going to be a demand for innovation. We're seeing the appetite for that in government. I think we'll see if some progress on the way that the government acquires these things. I think we'll see tremendous innovation when it comes to defense and warfighting. Who'd have thunk 20 years ago that we would have all these drones running around with weapons on them? I mean, you know, we never realized that. Those same innovations will come in today. And we do amazing things in defense and in the federal agency, in federal government on those kinds of things. I think we'll see more of that. Our job, my job, is to see how a company like ours can, you know, do more, even in an environment of less. And we'll figure that out, and we're thinking about how to do that as we speak.
As you spoke in the last segment about your optimism about a lot of different things, and I imagine given the climate as it is today, you have to be an optimist or you would just say, I'm not going to come in anymore. But as you look across this landscape and think about where we're headed, what do you think? Drill down into that optimism for me just real briefly and real quickly, and tell me what the one or two components of what you do every day are that drive that optimism.
Well, you know, first, I think that, you know, in the last 2 years, and I forgive me if I got the statistics wrong, but we've apparently in the last 2 years doubled all the information in the history of mankind. So that's
something
amazing.
I know it's something
it's
ridiculous
something
like that. Yeah.
So think of what's going to happen in the next 2 to 5 years. So demand for the kinds of things that I'm involved in is going to be insatiably greater. And government, so what I would like to think is going to be here in the next several years is, and what motivates me is, the government leadership will have access to information in an unparalleled way to be able to make decisions like is emerging in the Fortune 500, 1000 today. And the demand for that, to be able to satisfy those things so decisions can be made better. I think we will see technologies that we use in the home today being used in the workspace much more prolifically, and that excites me as well. So, and we'll deliver them faster too.
Mark, I've really enjoyed our conversation. Thank you very much for coming in today.
Francis, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me and for letting me and NS2 be involved with your program.
Happy to have you. Mark Testoni is the president of SAP NS2. You can hear this conversation archived later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And hour number 2 of In Depth with Francis Rose is coming next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
NBC News.